Virtus is the Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess. Okay, welcome back to Virtus. On today's episode, I'm talking to a good friend of mine. We got connected in a really interesting way, but he's got a lot of good stuff going on. A good friend that I've, you know, admired from a distance and actually got to meet in person several times. But he's got a lot of good stuff going on, and I wanted to bring him on to talk about productive property, and in particular in the realm of real estate and home renovations. His name is Riley Voth, and he's joining us from the Oklahoma Panhandle. So Riley, how's it going?
Yeah, man, going well. I'm in my secret bunker in the middle of nowhere.
That's right.
It's one of my locations. It's funny because there's actually guys in the network that'll, you know, I do all this communication electronically, and they'll be like, my computer's saying that this was sent from Texas. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And then they'll be like, but your address is Kansas. And I'm like, no, but sort of.
Yeah,
I'm ready for that FBI to try to track me, dude. They'll be so confused.
stay elusive, stay light. There you go.
Yeah. So that's all we can give away. The Oklahoma Panhandle. It's a little area. We narrowed it down for you, FBI. Good luck.
Yeah. Good luck. They have no interest in Oklahoma anyway. So maybe they do. Maybe they do. It went all red this last year. So
yeah, they'll get interest in it. There's some guys out here they'll want to. So the Oklahoma Panhandle this is totally not what we're here to talk about, but it's called no man's land because literally no one ever wanted to live there. And it became that little strip. That's why there's that strip out there. No one wanted to live there. No one wanted to claim it. And it just became the place where outlaws live. Hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if Andrew Torba from Gab is actually out here too, like my neighbor or something.
Yeah.
So.
Douglas Wilson, does he stop in every once in a while too?
He's probably got a bunker out here.
Yeah. All the outlaws out there.
Yep.
Nice. Well, Riley, him and I have an interesting connection. We actually met over Instagram online, but come to find out, him and his family went to the church that I currently serve at, you know, 20, 25 years ago. So there's a lot of people in my church, you know, some of the people with gray heads and some of the older folks who remember Riley, you know, kind of toddling around. And so that was a really interesting connection. So he's got kind of roots where I'm at right now. And so that was a pretty cool discovery for sure.
Yeah, man, I was born right there in the city you're now living in. That's a small world.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to have Riley on today to talk about, you know, productive property. But Riley, before we jump into, you know, real estate, why don't you just give us an overview of who you are, an introduction to who you are, your family, and then your big kind of life's work, The Majesty's Men. Tell us what's going on there, and then we can jump into real estate and I can ask you some questions. You can kind of give us a state.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always a lot to talk about when it comes to, like, I always joke when people say, like, so what do you do for a living? I'm like, well, how long do you have? Or I'll say, like, well, whatever pays the most next. But these days it is sort of honing into a few main things. But I like how you said that one of the, like, life works is a thing called themajesteymen.com and some projects that have grown out of it. So to just give an idea of who I am, I grew up on a farm and a ranch in Oklahoma and born in Colorado where you are. And we had a ranch there for a long time, but ended up moving back here to where my grandparents were helping them die and basically just helping them phase out and end their life. Farming and ranching, because farmers and ranchers never do a good job of retiring, and they basically go till they drop over dead. Mm-hmm. So my family, you know, my parents ended up back here, and my parents got married and became Christians. So I'm a fourth generation on the land out here and second generation Christian. But what's interesting is even my grandparents before me had a, like, they would have called themselves Christian. They were church going folks. Whether or not I'm going to see them in heaven, we will find out. But I, you know, I would be critical of their walk with God. So anyway, though, they did manage their their finances pretty well. They tried to live sort of a God-honoring life, and they did pass on an inheritance. And so then my father took most of that over and then has been working it. And I went off to do ministry and said, I'm getting out of this country life, and grew my hair long and got piercings, and then went off to play in bands, and then eventually got serious with the Lord and got into ministry and started playing in the worship band instead. But no, then I pastored a small church for a good while, and then ended up going and planting a church in a really liberal, very liberal college town, Lawrence, Kansas, which is like, people know of Boulder, Colorado. Well, that's like that's Kansas, Lawrence is the Boulder, Kansas, you know? So, just outside of Kansas City. So we planted a church there, did that. It went really well. I was with the North American Mission Board, the SBC, and, was kind of just climbing the ranks in the SBC, if you know anything about that and how that all works. I mean, it's, you know, it's like any organization, you know, you're climbing the hierarchy, you're getting well known, you're being asked to speak and preach in all these places, and they're like, you've got a big future. And long story short, I just started seeing a lot of things that I was like, man, things are messed up. So I just started questioning a lot of things that I found pretty quick were forbidden to question too much. And especially in sort of the circles that I was in on the local level there. Mm. And even though I was being told, like, you're next to be sent out, we're going to send you up to plant, because the North American Mission Board has this whole process where they approve you to go plant and then fund you all the money you need to hit the ground and get successful for the first few years. I went from being told, you know, you're so ready to go, you're more ready than the people we're sending to, your character is terrible, you got all these issues. And a thread that is running through all of this is this little thing called themajestiesmen.com. And that started when I was in college, and I was asked to start leading this men's ministry for our collegiate ministry. And I had some really strong guys, and we didn't know what to do. Like, we just would sit and have these great conversations, and these guys were growing, and a lot of people were wanting in. And so actually, this even is where my real estate stuff started. I actually subleased a house from the mayor, who was right next to the campus. Mm-hmm. We turned it into this like hub for these guys. And so we just started blogging and recording and doing this stuff, and it blew up on a national level for the first year and a half. And then it blew up like international. We had people from all around the world. And so long story short on the Majesty's Men was, I never knew what I was doing. I just knew men and masculinity, especially Christian masculinity, was really messed up. Like, it wasn't, things didn't look biblical, and things, there were no distinctions. People couldn't, and this was like, what, early 2000s to, you know, 2008 to 10 when this started. Mm. And people couldn't give me answers, like simple answers, like, what's the difference between a man and a woman? And it was a bunch of hemming and hawing. And so this thread is going through all of this and then comes up again when I'm in ministry. And I'm still just like, I don't even know what I'm doing with the Majesty's Men. I'm just running it. Guys are wanting in. I'm learning and developing a whole bunch of skills while we go. Mm-hmm. Like, I taught myself all the web development and everything, just because I was writing a lot. That's the way I process a lot of my thoughts, as I write. And so things were just kind of bubbling along, though I had no clue what was going on. And then this ministry stuff started happening, and it was as much the same questions. I was just saying, like, what if I want to be a man here? And the lead pastor I was under was starting to toy with, like, well, what if we wanted women to preach? And I was like, that seems pretty blatantly unbiblical. Here's reasons why, maybe. So I didn't really know a lot. I was trying to figure it out. And long story short is, I got run off. We parted ways. I mean, I went to them and said, we should part ways. And they were kind of like, yeah, we probably agree. So I quit my nice job there and was like, what are we going to do? And, that's what got me into real estate investment. So we had already been in the middle of remodeling a house because we were poor from ministry. And so by the time we were done with that, turned out my wife and I were pretty good at it. And a lot of people started saying, hey, will you do this for me? And that was at the same time I had left my church pastoral job there. And I was like, might as well do that for you. And so that sent me into a season of just doing a ton of remodeling projects and listening to a ton of podcasts and reading a lot of books and like audio books And really, like, God sent me on a journey of figuring a lot of this stuff out. So when I returned in about a year to saying, okay, here's what we're going to do with the Majesty's Men, it was like, we're no longer asking, what does it mean to be a man of God? We were like, okay, this is what we believe it means to be a man of God. Mm-hmm. And so these things kind of merged. And this was a long way to answer. Like, it kind of all convolutes together. But this, I mean, this is every man's journey. It's like, who are you and how did you get here? It's like, man, God just sent me on a ride. And I don't know, I've just been hanging on, trying to make sense of it as we go.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where I land now. I've now done multiple properties. We've got three rentals and live in a fourth house that we don't have to pay a mortgage on. And so I'm big into investment stuff. We're about to start another renovation. I've done some business renovations, some just odd jobs for people. I run themajestiesmen.com. Out of the Majesty's Men has grown what we call the Honor God Network, which is we're just taking all of our tech and hosting and stuff and giving it to exemplary men. And so, I mean, I could talk more about what the purpose and everything of the, all that is, but that's everything I do. Those are my main things now and kind of how I got there.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a ranch and he owns a ranch. So
Yeah. I always leave that out. That's the less, that's the less glamorous, but it's actually, I'm finding it's actually becoming, it's actually becoming kind of cool again. It's a funny thing, you know, in life you have these things laid before you and you're like, yeah, that's not cool. That's not hip. I'm not going to do that. So like I took music lessons from like 6 years old all the way into high school. And then I'm at like sports practice and the guy's like, oh, you got to leave the piano lessons.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, this isn't cool. I quit. And then I get into college and find out all the cool kids are musicians.
Yeah.
And all the ladies like the musicians. No kidding. I'm like, dang, yeah. What happened? I made the wrong choice. Well, same thing has happened with the farming and ranching now. It's like all of our tribe is like, man, my dream is to have a homestead. And I'm like, crud, I've got one. Maybe I should go back to it.
Yeah,
seriously. So, yeah, the serious thing there is my parents are getting older. And so it's kind of the same thing that my parents did. We've moved back and we're sort of helping figure out where this goes from here. But we are actually leaning into maybe even taking this over and running it as a business. And, you know, it's a real blessing. Again, the Lord has provided godly parents who have passed on a good inheritance. And so we're kind of thinking we'll keep stewarding it. And we're talking to some other guys through the Honor God Network about pitching in and doing some work here as well. But that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, so I do a lot of farming and ranching. My day job, when I'm not building websites by night or off flipping homes in between things, I'm usually tackling cows and feeding cows and stuff like that. So.
Nice. Yeah, he's a Renaissance man, Riley is. That's great, man. Yeah, I think it's cool. You know, I think you and I have talked and some of our other friends with Jared and Scott and whatnot, you know, kind of one of our inspirations, a guy who kind of, you know, put this stuff into a book, you know, Man of the House, C.R. Wiley.
Yeah.
You know, his big thing of productive property. You know, you're doing it right now. You know, a lot of us other guys are kind of on the path. You know, we've kind of caught the vision and stuff, but you're a little bit down the road, you know, than myself and some others. And, you know, real estate is something I've been interested in the past couple years. But it's such a big, you know, industry, you know, it's kind of like, where do you start? Where do you end? And there's so many questions between, you know, purchasing house, material, renovations, all that stuff, you know? So I wanted to have you on just to kind of pick your brain about that. And, yeah, so. So you said you got three properties, about to start another renovation, and you just kind of fell into it and it's worked for you. So, I mean, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a funny thing. Like I always make it sound like, yeah, we're just stumbling and bumbling. There is a lot of strategy involved and I love talking. I love talking the strategy because there really is a lot of strategy involved. You know, most Christian men can vouch for this. When you look back, you're like, how much of that was my strategy and how much was that just the Lord working things out, you know, like making stuff work. And I just was like a fortunate fool bumbling around going, I'm trying, God. And he's like, yeah. I got you. And so, you know, it all depends on how you frame it. Like you can make it sound like I'm just a bumbling fool, or you can make yourself sound like I'm a guru and I've got, and I try to go somewhere in between, because the reality is it does take a lot of strategy and a lot of work. And we could talk about a lot of that stuff. Cause, you know, the way I really got into it was, like I mentioned in the intro, we were so poor that I said to my wife, hey, you married a pastor, so if you want a house, this is it.
Yeah.
And it was like a Section 8 house, had flood damage, had like from pipes breaking, had mm-hmm. flooded everything mm-hmm. upstairs, downstairs, bunch of termite damage, was just in terrible condition. Not even the flippers in town would touch this. I mean, it was so bad. Yeah. And Lawrence is like, that's where KU is. It's a college town, just so many flippers there and real estate investors. No one would touch this. It had been on the market for over 2 years. And if a house stays on the market for 30 days in Lawrence, like something's terribly wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So that gives you an idea. Mm-hmm. And so my wife was like, are you sure? And I was like, no. So I actually like drew up a 3D diagram on some software for her and showed her my vision for it and sold her on it. And she was like, okay, let's do it. And so, you know, we went into that, and it's a crazy story how we even got the funding and all that worked. But, you know, it was just like, we went into it out of necessity at mm-hmm. first. And I didn't even know. It's like with the masculinity stuff. It's like, I could tell there was something here, but I didn't really, like, I was just wanting something for myself. And then the Lord was like, hey, we can maximize this. We can use this. And I was like, all right, let's keep going on. And I'd say, all in all, that's one of my, probably the reason I've lived the life I have, sort of entrepreneurial and almost never working for someone else, is just because I'm pretty good at looking at things and saying, can we capitalize on this? Like, is there something we can leverage this to do more with? And that's sort of like the mindset a man has to have if he's going to get into productive property and this kind of stuff. Like, yeah.
Nice. So yeah, man, that's awesome. I know I've seen some of your stuff on Instagram. I mean, when you're talking remodel, this isn't just painting a wall. It is down to the studs. You know, it is a full renovation, you know, so we're not just talking a little bit of paint, you know, a little bit of touch up. It's a full thing. So, I mean, you were in it to win it for sure.
Yeah. We do everything. I mean, I tell people now, there's not a system I haven't touched in the house. So I've done every single bit of a system of a house from top to bottom, from the electrical, the plumbing, the HVAC, and everything in between. So we do it all. And you know, this, I tell people all the time, and I always get these funny looks, like there is so much in common between web design and home design. Like that's a whole nother, I won't even get into all of it, but there's so much overlap in
pretty interesting
the skills involved. And obviously design is a big one, like, you know, but spatial recognition and design and all that. And so one of the things that we have going for us, of course, is that my wife and I are both pretty good with design. And so we can, I'm very good at the long-term like vision for the place. And then I can kind of come to her and be like, help me on these little details. Let's get this together while I work on this. And so we develop a plan and execute that pretty well. And in the end, you know, we go big on our properties. We always like to joke, we're not going to be slumlords. We like to take them to the top and then get top rent for them. So,
yeah. Well, even when we were talking in Illinois a couple months ago, you were saying that one of your rentals was kind of, your Airbnbs was setting the prices for like all of them in the city, right? Or something like mm-hmm. that. Like, and it was like advertised on Airbnb as, you know, so that's
quite the accomplishment, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we go for it when we, like, you know, we've done it enough now that we have like questions we ask, you know, and we're like, okay, how's this going to, like, where's the wow factor is going to be? How's it going to be really impressive? And so we really have sort of a line of thinking we run through, and we take, like I said, we take ours to the top so that we try to set the standard in the area, which, you know, and this gets into just Christian theology of work, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I believe that's who we should be as men of God, you know? And again, this is why I say all this stuff overlaps in my life. We learn so much in doing this, and I just believe that's who we should be as men of God. Like, we should be setting the standard in any area we are, taking it to the top so that others are looking at us being like, how can I achieve that level of excellence? You know, the virtus that it was all about, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Great. Well, actually, you know what, I think the first question that I'm going to put to you, it's not on the outline I sent you, so you gotta think quick. You know, how'd you learn all these skills, right? You said when you went into renovation, there's no system you haven't touched. Did you like, you know, work construction for 10 years, all these different trades? How'd you learn these skills? And how'd you,
Yeah. I mean, that's a really important question, because it's one I get asked a lot by guys through the Majesty's Man and people I talk to online, because I run into a lot of guys trying to make their way in the world, you know, and that's a common question. And the answer, I think, is very encouraging for any guy. I will say I had a background in tools and hard work, you know, from growing up on a farm and a ranch. Yeah. And my dad was very much like, why would we pay someone else to fix this when we can fix it? And, and really honestly in my life, that frustrated me, because I was like, because we could do other things while the experts do it.
Yeah.
But he taught me a very high level of like hard work. You lean into things, there's no problem that you can't figure out. Mm. And so I learned that mindset, and that's I can't leave that out, because that's a really pivotal thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like if you don't have that sort of figured outness that can lean into something and grit your teeth and persevere, then you're going to struggle as a man no matter what. You got to work on that. But that said, you get that mindset and realize anything can be figured out. You can learn anything. And then you couple that with the reality that information is cheap these days. The way I learned everything, it's kind of funny. Again, sovereign weirdness was going on in my life, where like I was stopping at garage sales and I was like, what is this tool? I don't know what this tool is. And the guy would be like, it's $2. And I'd be like, cool, I don't even know what it is, but I'll take it. And I was like oddly stockpiling tools for like my first 2-3 years of marriage. And I had no idea why. If you would have said, what do you have these for? I'd be like, I don't know. Man needs tools, right? And it was cheap and it was cool.
Yeah.
And then when we started the renovation, I would be like Googling things. I'd be like, how do you cut holes in drywall? And then they'd be like, well, there's this tool called a RotoZip. And I'd be like, I own that. I had no idea what that was. Yeah. That's what that is. So that was pretty weird. But you know, I just, again, the thriftiness is a big one, but a big skill in all this. But anyway, what I'm getting at is YouTube, man. You can learn everything you need to know on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so that is really... like when we were first working on it, we were still in that church I mentioned, we were having people come over and be like, how did you know how to do this? We had no idea you knew how to do this. So then I would just tell people, I'd say YouTube, like I didn't know how to do it until I knew how to do it. You know, we would just stay up late at night and read. And so, I mean, that's seriously the unglamorous answer, but also I think the really encouraging answer is I didn't know how to do most of the things until I learned how to do them. And I mean, information is so cheap these days. There would be the weirdest, darndest things. Like we splurged on a really fancy shower valve in our first house, because this was going to, originally, we didn't think we were going to get into real estate investment. We were like, this is going to be like our forever home.
Yeah.
So we're doing it to the nines. Mm-hmm. So we splurged on this like super expensive, fancy shower valve. And I'm sitting there trying to put it in going, I have no clue how to do this. And I'm like, no one will have info on this. And I went to the dark recesses of the internet and found a guy who's like, so if you run into this problem, and I was like, everything you need to know. And I've started, you know, during that time, I started realizing I should repay the favor and post some things like as you learn stuff. But people do that. It's so strange. There's people out there that record themselves doing literally everything and posting it online. And you're like, I don't know why you do this, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah, no kidding. So. Yeah, I've had the same experience, like, you know, 20 or 30 minute video, and like, man, I'm glad this guy filmed himself doing all this stuff, because it made my job a lot easier.
Right. I know. It's so weird. I mean, you know, and we joke about it, my wife and I, because like our forefathers used to have to go apprentice under a man, or find the right guys to ask questions. Or like in my childhood, it was like they were producing these big catalog books of like, you know, how to do all this stuff in a house. And, you know, so you'd find your resources or your people. And out here in the old days, all these homes were built by all the neighbors who would be like, these two brothers learned to do electrical pretty well. Only one house is burnt down. These guys are good at standing up walls or foundations, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they would all band together. Well, now we are spoiled. We are so spoiled. Now we have so much information at our fingertips. If you want to learn a trade, you can learn it. There is literally no excuse.
Nothing stopping you. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, you know, because like, I think when I've like thought about the idea of flipping a house, it's like, well, I'd have some skills, but I don't know nothing about this area. But what I'm hearing you say is really the skills you need are, like you said, thriftiness, perseverance, a work ethic, you know, being inquisitive, seeking out things, and, you know, those harder, tangible skills will kind of follow.
Yeah,
so that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like playing a musical instrument. You know, if once you learn the way music works a little bit, like a little bit about music theory, everything after that is just picking it up and learning the hand-eye coordination of like, how does this one instrument work? And that's the same thing with tools and fixing things. Like once you get in that mindset of like, I kind of have a knowledge of how this stuff happens, how it works. I mean, I'm speaking in vague generalities because it might help to give examples, but you pretty well learn like, okay, here's how the world works. And everything I run into is like, okay, here's sort of the process to figure this out, and I'll figure this out. And some things like will really frustrate you. And that's where it comes into like, there were times in our first remodel that my wife would just be in tears and so exhausted. And I would just say, go home, go to sleep. What you need now is sleep more than anything else. Mm-hmm. I will get this fixed. I will be home tonight. And I'd come home at 3 a.m. and she'd wake up in the morning and she'd be like, did you get it? I'd be like, yes, I did not quit until I got it. But, you know, and I'm not going to lie, there were a few times towards the end of that, our first one, that I was getting into tears and I was like, someone please come save us from this. But man, you just have to like push into that. And eventually, you know, now if I run into a new problem now, it's been 4 or 5 years. Like, I'm just like, sweet, a new thing.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. But at first, you know, at first it was like grueling, but yeah, I mean, it's all learnable. It's all doable. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Great to know. What about, you know, financing for some of these houses, or maybe like you said, it was your own house. Are you taking out loans? Are you using credit cards? Are you out of pocket family loans? What's been your kind of MO there?
Yeah. So you'll find if you get into this productive property world, especially the productive property of real estate, but this is true of almost any productive property, livestock and other things like that. Creativity is another thing that you have to get. You know, I say creativity, but most people, when you hear creativity, think of like bubbly artsy type creativity.
Right.
But this is, I'm talking more like strategic creativity. Mm. There's really no limit to, there are so many ways to get finances. And when you first start listening to this, people are like, there's so many ways to get finances. It's all on you. Like, you can figure this out. And it sounds like ridiculous. You're like, no, I'm seriously broke as a joke, like a really bad joke. And it's frustrating, but the longer you do it, it is hard to, because you're like, no, there's so many ways. So I can just tell my story a little bit of how
we did
it. And then, you know, it's like you go from there, because everyone starts in a different place. Right. Mm-hmm. And obviously the more money you have starting, the easier it is to be creative with it.
Right.
But we literally had none. So we were operating, you know, poor pastoral salary stuff. And I wasn't making anything much, like a few little odd jobs in my web design stuff, teaching myself web design. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'd get a little extra here and there and try to steward that well. But again, thrifty, we were living very thrifty, living on a tight budget. We had a tight budget. And this is super important if you're a guy starting from little. So if you don't have a lot to start with, you need to know where your dollars are going. Mm-hmm. Why they're going there. So like, we did not have television. We did not have, we paid for internet, but we had no subscription services to things, like none of that kind of stuff that just like eats away your finances every month, just nibbling away. So we were not eating out. We were cooking all our meals. So we're living like on a shoestring budget. I mean, for real, I think our first few years of marriage, I know our first year of marriage, we made $12,000 together. By the time we had done our first house, which was year 4 or 5 of marriage, we had our biggest year ever that year. And put together, we earned, it was just over 40,000, I think like 42,000. So that gives you an idea of like, I mean, and that was our biggest year ever. Put together, we had earned 42,000. Mm-hmm. So she was working, my wife was working some, and full time. And I was, you know, doing pastoral work and odd work on the side to earn a little. So, I mean, that tells you how little we're living off of. And we were living in a pretty expensive town at that point too. So,
right. Yeah.
So we go into this with debt, but we had been really hard paying off debt, trying to free up more cash flow. We go into this with nothing. I mean, our finances are in the red, but, we did have one advantage. And like I said, everyone starts in a different place where We had a great community, and man, community is a huge thing in everything, but we had a great church community and really cool story there, but I think it could use up too much time. But basically the community we had got us before a president of a bank that we didn't think he was a president. We thought he was like just a loan officer.
Yeah.
And so here I am, this guy, I'm like thinking to myself, man, he's really confident. He's all like, I can get my guys on this. And I'm like,
what guys are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, it turns out he's the president of the bank and he was speaking from the authority he had.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness. Wow. But that meeting ended with me just kind of telling them like, I'm a get it done kind of guy. Here's my strategy. I've got a game plan. We had budgeted out like all the line items of here's the changes we're going to make. And he was like, I think this is going to be really good for both of us. I believe in you. We can do this. And, you know, again, I went into it with a warm introduction from some other guys in my community that knew and had said, this guy is a hard worker. He'll get stuff done. Mm-hmm. He'll deliver on what he says. And so that was big, but, so that, and then my other big thing was my parents gave us $7,000 to put towards the down payment. And so I want to give credit there. Yeah. We had like three to put towards it, I think. And they gave the other seven and to say, here, get your first house, get going. And, you know, and they knew what we were getting into. But my parents are, again, my parents have remodeled like 8 homes. So they were like, yeah, do it. It'll be good for you guys. It'll be good for your marriage. And so they, you know, they weren't new to this. And so I had a great blessing there as well. But so that was what got the ball rolling for us. When we finished that, dude, we earned, so we bought the house for 99, which was astronomically low for that market, 99. We put 20,000 in because we did all the work ourselves. Mm-hmm. No, that's not true. We paid 10 of that for guys to come in and put windows, and they did the windows, and basically that was it. So for the price of windows and installation, so I learned from that. So half of it went to that. I learned from that. I will learn to do my own windows. And so I do my own windows now.
Yeah.
But so 10 went to those guys to do the windows and stuff, and then we did the other 10 did the entire stinking house, three bedroom house, kitchen, bath, half bath, all of it, deck, yard, landscaping, retaining walls. I mean, all of it.
Wow.
With the other 10. So, you know, we thrifted hard. We bought all this stuff from like Craigslist and restores, like the Habitat for Humanity restores, and just thriftiness, like thrifty as can be. Mm-hmm. But it came out just like beautiful and amazing. And no one would have known that like our oven was only $200 because we got it from this high end house that was being flipped for stainless steel. And you know, it was a white stove that was $2,000 new, but it was white. So, you know, just things like that. So we're like, well, we'll take it. We like white. So at that price, we love white. So just, you know, that's our story again. We just thrifted it, got it done, did the work ourselves. But we made $40,000 off of that first house in the end. So what I say by make is in equity. Mm-hmm. So over the years now, we've been able to refinance and pull cash out of that. That's become a big piggy bank for us. And the cool thing in productive property, which I know you know this, but for the sake of listeners, it appreciates. So now that house is worth... it was, we had it refinanced and pulled some money out again this last year, and it appraised for $220,000.
There you go.
So, that gives you an idea of this scope of like, we built this, all this money into it, and then it's appreciated as well. Cause that market is kind of blown up. Not every deal is going to be like that. I should give it like that market. Yeah. We've been blessed in that market, but, So that is, you know, how we got the ball rolling. And ever since then, now there's been just like, now we sort of have the leverage to be really creative. And so you can start bringing in outside investors that, again, after they've seen you do one job and deliver and do well, both the banks and private investors will be like, hey, let's work together.
Right.
Because there are people out there with money that are like, I don't have the time to do that, but I would love to give you my money if you do that again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can surely do that again. You've done it once. So before we came out here, to give you an idea of that, like before we came out here to the ranch, I had an investor sit down with me, not even a Christian guy, But we had coffee together and he said, I have over 2 million at my disposal. And he said, I want you to build me from the ground up 3 homes and do what you do. And he said, I have got more than available if that goes well. And so we had a big choice when we decided to come out here to the farm and ranch, because we had already kind of hit that spot. We had done 3 homes by then. And he was like, you do good work. I want you.
Yeah.
I want you using my money. And so, so you get, there's all sorts of ways. I mean, just one more quick example. Mm-hmm. I went to a young couple in our church and said, they were about to get married. And I knew the guy had come from a background of hard work. He had grown up on a farm. And I went to him and I said, hey, you guys, and she had a great sense of design. And I was like, you guys need this little house I found in town. And I had put together the finances and the deal. And I said, and I knew they had good jobs, like just steady jobs, not like booming jobs, but just steady pay. And that's what banks care about most is it steady pay. And I said, you guys need to have this house. I've put this deal together. It's terrible. It's another one of those, not a single person would touch it. It had had a fire and was just wrecked on the inside. Like everyone thought it was going to be bulldozed. And I said, perfect opportunity for a young couple. Right. And they had seen our house and they were like, this is how yours started out. And we were like, yeah. And they were like, well, we would like to have this. Mm. So we put together a deal where I basically split the equity in it. And I said, I'll do the work. You give me 20,000 and 24,000 and you'll get 20. You show up and work as much as you can as second set of hands. And then I said, you guys do all the purchasing and design and I'll build it out for you. And of course I did a lot of like counseling on good decisions and design stuff. And so just like creative things like that. So basically they shouldered the burden, but I did all the work.
Yeah.
And so I flipped that house, but we split equity on it. And you know, I made 20,000 in a few months off of that. So, you know, there's so many creative ways to just start. You just start looking at the world and strategizing these things. And you're like, if this, we could do that. And so, yeah. So, I mean, I'm talking now with guys all the time. I'm like, hey, if you want to put this much money in, we're going to do this and that. And here's maybe a good time to give this plug. And then I'll simmer down on this, but I'll give this plug of like, if you're wanting to learn more about this, your listeners are, again, with the Mattresses Men, we've built out this thing called the Honor God Network. And it's just a network of guys that are exemplary, good men. A lot of them are pastors. A lot of them are Christian business owners. We host podcasts, all this stuff. We are also building out sort of a social network, like niche community. Mm-hmm. And one of those like forums and groups that we're going to have in this community is an investor group. We're going to start an investor group. And even if you're not wanting to invest in it, you could, like big money and stuff, you can still join in. And we're going to be addressing a lot of these things and talking a lot of these things. So you've had Scott Tungay on. He and I are going to be heading this up together. Just talking about this type of productive property and investment stuff. And we are going to get guys to pull money and then put it into projects. And then the small fish or the new guys can learn and watch, and we'll talk it out while we're doing things and stuff. And so if you have guys interested, I mean, that's a great way to learn this stuff, is just listen to guys talk who have been doing it. I binged after that first year, I started binging podcasts and stuff on it, and just, it'll blow your mind. The creative deals that people put together and you're like, wow, I see how you did that. And so, yeah, there's a lot to learn. And, you know, creativity is always sparked by seeing what other stuff, like other people have done, obviously starting with the Lord all the way to other people. Yeah. And that's where our creativity comes from. And you're just like, oh, I can piece things together like that too. Mm-hmm. So
nice. Well, I'm sure it's a world, once you kind of, you know, like you said, get familiar with the jargon and stuff, you can kind of begin to get creative. And once you kind of immerse yourself in it, I'm sure it is easier to figure out, you know, financing and get creative with it, like you said. So
and you know, you develop a relationship with, and here's a big tip I forget to mention sometimes. Small town banks are like, you know, local banks are almost always 100 times better than the big name brand fancy banks that give you cookies and the smell of popcorn when you walk into their lobby. Like forget them and all their fancy schmanciness. We were going with one originally that tried to pull some shenanigans on us and wanted like a whole lot more money 5 days before closing. And that was like, no, develop a good relationship with the hometown boys, the small localized banks, and stick with them. Those guys will have your back, because it's a win-win. And you, I can text the vice president of the main bank we work with. I could text him today and be like, I got this deal. And he'd be like, all right, let's do it.
Nice. You know, so that's great. I love that. That's good advice.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk a bit about, you know, cash flow. You know, so you said at the end of this one project, you made 20 grand, you know, I'm not sure how long it took you, but what does, you know, cash flow look like? Are you doing this full time? Is it pretty bare for a couple months or are you, what is that? I think that's like, you know, a big question I have, you know, cause you know, that consistent pay of 2 times a month, you know, it's pretty comfortable. So to step outside that world and say, well, we don't know what it's going to be like month to month. You know, so what is that kind of, what has your been your experience in kind of a month to month cash flow for your own personal family, you know, putting food on the table, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And all this stuff gets a lot harder when you do have kids and you gotta, you know, clothe and feed those little ones because it's a little bit easier when it's just you and your wife. And man, I would tell anyone like, don't let this discourage you if this isn't you, but if you are young and especially if you're a single guy and you're interested in this, don't screw around. Like, don't play, like get after it now because it'll never be easier to get solid footing right now. If you wait, and I talked to a guy a couple of years ago, I still think of him and I'm like, his life's going to end in ruin. This is just the wrong mentality. He was like, I'm going to travel and do all this stuff while I'm single because, you know, when I get married, that's when I'll be. And I'm like, dude, you're a fool.
Yeah.
You will regret that so much. Like, don't play. Play when you've got a wife and kids to go enjoy it with, you know? When you're young and in your 20s, like grind and work. You will have such a better, like so much more productivity if you start it when you're young and you don't have the responsibilities of like, because man, if you're a single guy, you can literally sleep in the bathtub of that house.
No
if
kidding.
You need, you know?
Yeah.
Like you don't have to turn on an AC or a heater even, you know? And you know, you can do things that are totally different from when you have kids and stuff. And so especially
be home every evening for dinner.
Right.
Yep. Dinner is at 10 o'clock with, you know, leftover pizza or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever shows up to work was who, you know, on our first house, cause we didn't have kids. We would just like, whoever was there working, cause we would always invite friends to come like learn. And a lot of guys were like, hey, I just want to like learn. Can I come help? Yes, please.
Yeah.
And it would just be like, we'd all be working and be like, is everyone getting hungry? What do you want to eat? We'd order something in or like we, for a long time, you know, we actually had to move into that house before it was done because our rental was up. And so we just lived off of a microwave and a skillet on the floor. And we'd plastic wrap over our bed at night and like dust it off and dust our feet off to crawl into bed at night.
Yeah.
And we'd wash our dishes in the bathtub. And that was our life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we would just be like, well, we can scrap together some stuff. And, you know, we got some leftovers here and there. And we'd throw stuff on a skillet and figure it out. Well, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot different now that we have kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we try not to wash our dishes in the bathtub now because our kids probably need it. And so, so cash flow, you know, start early. The earlier you start, the better. But so now what we do, it depends a lot. I have a different mentality than a lot of people in our tribe, even of like, I do take on more debt than most people, but again, it's strategic. It's not, I'm not just like young guns blazing.
Yeah.
Irrational, but some people might think so because I don't take the Dave Ramsey approach of all debt is terrible debt.
Yeah.
I try to invest, and most millionaires that aren't Dave Ramsey will tell you this.
Mm.
If people are giving away cheap money, you take it and put it to work.
Yeah.
And that is the reality still right now. I think like we could talk, I think our economy is headed towards some major disasters and especially with our current regime in charge. I think we're going to crash and burn, but that's a topic for another time. Right now, you can get really cheap money. And so we take that and we put it to work. And you can't buy groceries out of construction loans. They poo-poo on that. You can't do that, but you can buy a lot of things and do a lot of things with it. And so the main thing is you just have to have enough to live off of while doing that construction. And that's relative to everybody. For us, we keep that really cheap because we still, to this day, I mean, and we've got a lot of money now, but we don't have subscription services. Mm-hmm. We don't have television. We don't have these things that are just like, what value do they actually, Yeah, they're time wasters and they're money wasters. Mm-hmm. And we still cook a lot. We don't eat out. That's so expensive, eating out.
Yeah.
We will eat out some if we're on the job grinding, because mm-hmm. it's kind of like, it's worth it to get this done mm-hmm. as fast as you can. So, but you know, still all that to say, so cash flow, to try to get some specifics, would be most of the time now, I mean, again, at first we didn't have a rental. So now we've got some passive income that will float us. So we're about to take on this one coming up here. We're going to start in 2 weeks and I'm going to go and live on site and work and just try to knock it out in 30 to 60 days tops. And it's going to be pretty top to bottom renovation. But I'm going to pay another guy to show up. And then the two of us are going to try to knock this out as fast as we can, but I'm going to live off that passive income. Part of my approach is I never leave much money in the bank account. So never. So like we always have a few thousand like emergency fund. Otherwise we're investing everything we've got into property. So not always like houses, but just some property. So sometimes that's a vehicle even, which again, Dave Ramsey would be like, "Oh, you're an idiot." You got to figure out what works for you. But
yeah,
I believe in storing my money in property more than a bank account, because it loses value fast in a bank account. Inflation is always eating it away.
Yeah.
And arguably just as fast as any vehicle, right? But if you take care of that vehicle. So to give you an example, this is happening right now. This weekend, I'm selling a Jeep that we own. It's a new Jeep. It only has 24,000 miles on it. We bought it like 2 years ago, but we haven't used it heavily. I'm selling it. I'm lucking out that the market is actually up right now. We're actually going to sell it for more than we originally paid for it. Nice. But even if not, in the past, we've done this with a vehicle on when we went into a renovation. We sold a vehicle, didn't sell it for what I paid for it, but a few thousand less. We had taken really good care of it. But because we had steadily paid that down while we had money, we didn't leave anything in the bank account. We put it towards that. I'm going to cash out $7,000 or $8,000 out of this vehicle. Nice. Seven. And that will be what I live off of during this renovation time. So a little bit of passive income and then this vehicle sell that's going to happen this weekend. And then that'll get me through the couple months of renovation and as well as my family.
Yep.
And then when we're done, and this is the cool trick that people don't realize you can do. When we're done with this renovation, we will go to the bank and refinance it. And when we refinance it, we will have built all that value into it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we'll pull that out now and that is tax-free. So that's tax-free value when you pull that out. And then we now have that to reinvest in something else. And so, or in this case, like if we will use a credit line that we have and we'll buy a lot of merchandise on some credit lines with some big box stores and things. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that money that we pull out, we'll pay all that and wipe that clean. Mm. And so all those debts will be zeroed out. And then we'll have hopefully some left as well to reinvest or, you know, pocket and spend how we want. And that money you can spend however you want. Once you refinance it, that's your money. You can you can go buy another car with it or go on vacation with it. I wouldn't recommend it. I'd recommend you keep snowballing it, but you can, you know, like we might celebrate and do something with a little bit of it, you know, but so, you know, that's the project life. And that refinancing is the big key. So that's how you keep funding things. And again, my strategy is always, I'm looking at things going, I don't want to leave this money sitting. What can I put it into? Mm-hmm. And then if I need to cash that back out, like I've got an asset or at least a piece of property. Most people argue cars aren't assets, and they really aren't. They're more liabilities, but it's storing your value there. And I like that better than a bank account, because like, again, if the economy crashes, it's like, Your money is wiped out. It's gone. If you had $20,000 in the bank account, it's nothingness. Mm-hmm. But that car will still roll, and you've got a tool there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really do put it into actual tools and property, and there's a lot of options you can do to use your money well. But again, this is worth reiterating. Live thrifty if you want to live like this, and so much stuff is easier. If you've got a whole bunch of little bills and debts out there eating away at things, it'll eat it up and you'll never feel like you can do it. So I differentiate between good debts and bad debts. Good debts pay for themselves or can easily pay for themselves, and you have the money to cover them. if ever you need be. Bad debts are like student loans, because they usually don't pay for themselves.
Right.
And, you know, just like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like commerce type, just, you know.
Yeah. Just frivolous, you know.
Yeah. Frivolous spending. So
yeah. Consumerism.
Yes. Consumer debt. Consumer, yeah. That's the word. Consumer debt. You know, just if you get a credit card and you're just racking stuff up on there and not really paying it off, that will destroy you. Like interest will either make you rich or make you poor. Mm. There's really no in between. Like, you know, it's all in how you use that interest. And bad debt will make you real poor real fast. But anyway.
Yeah. That's great, man. There's a lot of things we could talk about there. I think, yeah, you know, just the idea of, I think that, what's his name? Robert Kiyosaki or whatever his name is. Is that his name?
Yes. Yeah.
Rich dad, poor dad, dude. You know, like, you know,
I wasn't going to mention him, 'cause I was like, I don't know if you'll know who he is, but yeah.
Like, you know, you can work for your money or you can have your money work for you. You know, I think that's a good distinction. 'Cause
well, and he's famous for always saying too, sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're good.
He's famous for saying, the advice that Dave Ramsey get, like, let me rephrase it. He's not famous for saying this, but he famously says this all the time. The advice that Dave Ramsey gives is really good advice for people who are financially illiterate. Like if you're really ignorant of finances, follow Dave Ramsey's plan. Like definitely you won't like wreck your life by doing that. But it's not really great advice if you're trying to get really wealthy and you have some financial wisdom. There are other strategies, but if you are just
wealth beyond just cash.
Yeah. And then you do maybe listen to guys like Robert Kiyosaki, because he, you know, he'll laugh. And he's like, I'm friends with Dave Ramsey, but I laugh at him. Like you know, he's like, his advice is great advice for financially ignorant people. Mm-hmm. But dude, we all start there. Like I started in year two of marriage. My wife and I went through all the Dave Ramsey financial peace stuff and got our poop in a pile, you know, like we got our life together. Like, And so there's no shame in starting there. Like, I'm not saying that, like you got to start, and Dave Ramsey is a great place to start.
Right.
Yeah.
So no, that's good stuff. Well, I've got one more question for you, but any other just kind of general tips, lessons, stories from real estate or anything like that?
Oh my, I mean, I can always tell. It's funny. When you live this life, like my wife and I will just sit and like sometimes in the evenings, like put the kids to bed and we'll just sit and talk through like, you remember that? You remember that? Did you see how like the Lord orchestrated this, where this thing we did 3 years ago is paying off now in this way or that way.
Yeah.
And it's a funny thing to like live this sort of life. It takes a lot of faith and hard work. And I would say this would be one tip. Marry wisely. And if you already are married, go easy on your wife in this. Like I'm imagining most of your show is men. And so I'm saying like, this is a hard life, this project life, entrepreneurial life, property life, home economy life. So much of it depends on your wife and how she can handle things and where she's at in the growth of like being able to handle things. Like my wife is in a place now that she would not even recognize. Her former self 4 or 5 years ago would be like, that woman is insane. Like, you know, and she loves it now, but it was, you know, you have to give them a lot of space to grow and ease into it. Like it's easy for a guy to get like listening to this stuff and be like, rah, here's what we're gonna do and steamroll your wife and make life miserable. You know, you have to realize you're listening to guys who are many years down the road and have hopefully brought their wife along gently, carefully, trying not to steamroll them. Right. But also hopefully their wife has been good about learning from wise women and listening to wise women. And I'll give a plug for a lot of people don't know that the Majesty Men also, because we haven't really announced it yet, but fruitfulandfearless.com. We've given them the same thing that the majestiesmen.com has. And so we're growing that out as a women's network.
Nice.
And the two ladies that head that up, Lexi Sauvé, and Jordan Sparks, wives of guys in the network. Mm-hmm. There are phenomenal resources of just encouragement and courage and strength for women,
yeah,
and godly feminine thinking. And, you know, shepherd your wife carefully in this stuff. That's really worth saying too. Like, that's really important. Mm. She will, like the Proverbs 31 woman, right? She will absolutely expand everything you can do exponentially more than you could do, or she will wreck it. But a lot of that depends on your leadership. You can't just be like, you need to expand my work and expect it to expect it to go well.
Yeah.
She needs to learn to love it, you know? And sometimes that takes time because women, you say this to the wrong feminist, you'll get your head chopped off, but I don't care. This is reality. Women are designed to want to design a space, settle into it, and nourish and nurture and build relationships. And so this is hard to always be throwing your wife into this crazy mix. And like, we've had to live like nomads for 2 or 3 years with this last phase we've come out of. And so we haven't been settled in a place, and we literally gave up our home. We did settle, and we were just like getting deep, deep roots in the community, like deep roots. And this house was just optimized for us in every way. And my wife had to give that up to go on this journey we're now on. And now living in the country, and all of our houses, like we pull up to a house and our kids like, is this one of our houses? And we're like, no, this one is, or that one's not. Yeah. You know, and like, nice. That's a hard life for your wife to live. Like, wives usually want to settle a place and make it, you know, their home turf and their nest.
Kind of roost down. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a wonderful, wonderful trait. Totally. Yeah. But, so you have to really honor that in your wife and shepherd her wisely and gently and patiently.
No, that's great, man. I think, just being educated on just the nature of men and women. Cause I think men are more gung ho. They're more mission oriented. They're like, let's do this. You know, we're both going to stay up till 10 or 3, like you said, you know, but you know, women are more domestically oriented, you know? And I think that, you know, recognizing that, you know, not expecting your wife to be like you or on the same level, maybe, you know, because you're the man, you've got all this energy, you've got the drive, you know, in a different way than she has drive. So,
Well, and let me say this too. And this could be a long episode if we have to divide it up in two or just go on, but all this stuff I think is so important. Your job as a man too, is to give your wife the tools for success that she needs to feel like she's thriving. And so it would be very easy for a guy who's caught this vision and has this sort of entrepreneurial drive and productive property drive to be like, everything we have must go back into the business, which would be, you know, wonderful if that was like, if it was only you, right? And you could sleep in your bathtub. but when you have a wife and kids, you need to set her up for success in her domains where she feels like she is well equipped to thrive. Mm-hmm. And that's probably one of the biggest things you can do with this stuff to make her love it is, and again, if real estate is your thing, then you've got an advantage because you can make her a really nice home. And when she says, oh, I would really like to have my bathroom look like this, you can be like, on it, gonna do that, you know? Yeah. And so, but give her the tools and the resources. And nowadays too, this goes back to your cash flow budget. We keep some finances separated. So we have different accounts, and like one is my work account all the time. And then I'll pull money off that and put it into our personal account and say, do with it as you will. So like buy food, buy decor, buy clothes for the kids, buy toys, tools, things you want, whatever. Mm-hmm. And she really thrives at that. And she's learned to love doing that. And, you know, we still to this day keep a budget. It's not as tight and neat as it used to be, but it's still pretty tight. Like, we could tell you where our finances are going any day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we monitor those pretty closely, but she knows, like, I give her what she needs. And if she says, oh, I need to spend some money on this, what do you think? It's like, yeah, let's do it. Like, she's learned to be a wise financial steward now because of living like this for a few years. Yeah. And so now, you know, she feels like this project life has really blessed her in her domains too. So she loves it. Whenever I take on another project, she's like, all right, I know. And this is so much for like, men, if you have not proven that you are going to deliver and not just once, like you need to prove that you can deliver quite a few times. Like, she's not going to just be like gung-ho about things. But once you have proven that you can deliver, that you can plow through a season, and in the end, it is good and was worth it. Once she's seen that multiple times, like, most wives will learn to be like, go get it, you know? Cool. This always ends well for us. Like, you continue to expand the domains of our family and strengthen our footing. And so when you make risky decisions, you know, I know that you're going to manage them well. And so yeah, that's, man, I feel like we could have a whole show on just like wife stuff, but
yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's your job as an honorable man, is to set her up with the tools for success. And she will love it a lot more if you do pull money off of this and give it to her for her to feel like she's flourishing and the kids are flourishing.
Yeah, man, that's all really phenomenal advice. I think, yeah, I mean, cause your wife and kids are going to be an integral part of all that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's good wisdom.
That's the home economy too, right? Like, you want your kids to grow up learning, like, this is amazing. Like, this project life we live, like, great. I want to be a part of it. How can I jump in and help? And that's going to, you know, when you're not all like struggling and suffering and bad attitudes and stuff all the time, like, that's how they're going to catch that. They're going to be like, this is fun. My parents love it. We thrive in this. And so I want to be a part of it too.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, man. Well, the last question, you've hit on it on multiple times, but one of the things I really like in C.R. Wiley's book is he says that, you know, productive property, you know, cultivates virtue, you know, so you have to be a certain type of person to have it. And you've talked already about thrift and risk and, you know, being frugal and creative and all that stuff. But what would you encourage a man toward, you know, in terms of virtue, you know, kind of the name of this podcast? You know, how has having these properties and these businesses, you know, changed you as a person, you know, from point A to point B? Like you said, you already came in with some stuff, but how have you noticed, you know, these other properties kind of changing you?
Yeah. Oh, man, there's so much that could be said there, but to try to keep it concise is just, there used to be a funny saying in the manos, like the early 2000s manosphere, which was pre-manosphere days, but there was sort of an uptick in the young, restless, reform, like macho men stuff for a while. And one of the phrases that came out of that was really good was, men are like an old truck, you know, they drive straighter with a load on their back. Mm. And I do think that's very true. Mm. I think it's very good as a man to load your back up, you know, obviously not till it's broken down and you don't want to live your life like gasping for air at all times. Like, you need to have some wise margin in there to serve and bless other people and your family, all that stuff. But you need to keep it loaded, because men without loaded backs, and what that means obviously is a lot of responsibilities.
Yeah.
Find ways to get cheap thrills and cheap fixes. Cause I believe God has wired us to have responsibility, to conquer, to work and to keep and to conquer things. And if you aren't doing that, you'll turn to things like video games and porn to trick your brain into getting those pseudo successes, right? Mm-hmm. Those pseudo victories. Mm-hmm. And that's cheap. And it leads you down a spiral of destruction. Whereas if you keep a lot of responsibility on your back, you don't have time to get bored or to like have some shortage of feelings of victories. And I'm maybe a little wired more than most people to like want to achieve.
Yeah.
But I think that's true of every man. Like, every man I talk to via the Majesty's Man, the Honor God Network, and just real life stuff, even that aren't Christians, they are driven to like, I want to achieve. Like, they respect what I'm doing and they're drawn to it because they're like, I want victories like that. I want to conquer things. I want that feeling of stuff. And obviously, we know as Christians, Christ is what gives all of this grand vision, right? Like, this life that I've been living now has actually turned me into a post-mill guy, which is a whole other topic.
Nice.
I wasn't when I started this, but I always said, I am predisposed to be post-mill because that's how I want to live.
Right. That's how you live your life. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was very slow to become post-mill because I was like, no. I know that I want this to be true. And anytime you want a theological view to be true, you need to drag your feet and make sure you're not making bad decisions. But, you know, that just goes to show that I believe God has made men this way. And the other part of that is, you know, like you said, you develop so much character. Like convictions are easy to come by, and convictions are foundational. They're good. Totally. But a lot of that is knowledge, and your best convictions will be like drilled in through experience, but it starts with knowledge, obviously knowledge of the Lord and what is righteous, but then you experience things, and convictions are good, but character takes slow formation over time. And same with competency. Mm-hmm. And that's something I look for in guys. Like when I'm assessing, like, should we bring this guy into the Honor God Network? I look, what's his convictions? Those need to line up. Yep. What's his competency? Those need to be pretty high. And what's his character? And those things, like character especially, takes a long formation time. And the verse I think of, I pulled it up here, because Romans 5:3-5, we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. Mm. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit, who he has given to us. I feel like living this sort of life is a character development thing, because it's not like we have people shooting at us, right?
Sure.
It's not that kind of suffering, but it is suffering. Like you go through hardships. You have to like learn to persevere through things. You have to look at other people spending money on fancier vehicles and eating out all the time. And you have to look at your budget and say, no, we can't do that. It just objectively can't happen. So yeah. No, we have a grander vision that we want our family and life and grandchildren even to be down the road. So we're persevering for this. And it gives you this hope of like, God will bless our steps, guide our steps as we set our plan and our course. He will guide our steps. And he, man, my wife and I talk so much about future grace. And that's a book by John Piper, the Future Grace, pivotal book. We read that when we first started this stuff. And having that faith in future grace, that's the hope that we have. And hope is what drives us as men. Hope is what drives us as Christians.
Yeah.
It's often framed as gratitude, but gratitude is good and essential, but it's hope that drives us, not gratitude. Mm-hmm. We don't just look back. We look forward for faith and future grace. Yeah. And working like this, it builds that into you. Like you realize like God shows up, and if I'm working as though unto the Lord and trying to glorify him, he continues to bless it. And dude, it just keeps on going. I mean, I have opportunities now that God is giving me that I could not have even dreamed of 5 years ago. And I'm in a place now with what we're doing through the network and the productive property like stuff that I wouldn't have, if you would have said I was been here, I would have been like, I don't even know what you're talking about. None of that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, you become a conduit when you live as a man with virtues, you become a conduit that God can send stuff down, because you're stewarding his world and his resources well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it sounds sort of boastful, but I would like to think that we're doing a good job of that. And we're constantly checking that. We're constantly praying things through. And I'm constantly talking to God about it. And I laugh, because when I first got married, I was that totally non-virtus man that had lived a playboy life, just playing around and had squandered my money.
Yeah.
And I knew marriage was going to be so crazy hard. So one of the first things I started praying to God was like, God, give me more than I can handle, and just keep me enthralled so that I don't do stupid stuff and get sidetracked and you know, jack up my life. And man, he has answered that prayer. That is a really good prayer for him to pray, because God will be like, all right, man,
here you go.
I will do that for you. Yeah. And man, he has answered it and really blessed it. And so I mean, I hope that makes sense, but I think that's a life of virtues for sure.
Yeah. Man, that's all really good stuff. This has been a great conversation, Riley. I appreciate your time this morning. And where can people, you know, reach out to you if they have questions or considerations, or maybe they want to learn more about the Majesty's Men and all the stuff you guys got going on there? So where's a good locate for you?
Yeah, absolutely. My personal site is being remade, RileyAdamVoth.com. So there's not a lot you can see right now. And who knows when I'll finish that, because it's not top priority. But you can get a hold of me through themajestiesmen.com all the time. There's ways to do, but social media is all the same. it's going to be at the Majesty's Mint, or it's going to be at Riley Adam Voth, my full name. And so, man, you'll find me on every platform, and the Majesty's Mint on every platform. So far, we haven't been banned. Check back next week. But that's also why we're building all of our own stuff, because eventually we will be, well, we pretty much are already are completely uncancelable. But yeah. You don't find us on the main stuff. You can go to the .coms and get at me through there. And we will soon have an investment group and a social network, an Honor God network. We're not sure what we're going to call it yet, but I'm toying with like the Honor God Guild, something cool like that.
Love it. That's awesome.
But yeah, you'll be able to join that for real cheap, like real, real cheap to maybe even free. I'm not sure how we're going to set up the finances to fund that yet, but you'll be able to join that. And then there's no one that can ban us for talking about all the stuff all the time. Because we're gonna take the world for Jesus. So.
That's right, man. Better watch out. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on again, man. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, well, it was my pleasure. I really enjoy your show. You've done a great job with it.
Well, thank you, sir. All right, everybody, get out there and do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtus is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.